The following shiur has been presented by Rav Moshe Rotberg, author of the halachic work Emergencies in Halacha, and has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center. To dedicate a daf, a perik, or an entire masechta, please call 1-888-485-8223 or email info@thehalachacenter.org.
Mishnah and Shabbat, Zayinim and Aleph. The Mishnah is talking about the Malacha of Tzad. Mishnah starts off saying, Shemoyne Shratim Amurim B'Torah, the eight Shratim that are mentioned in the Torah, Hatzadon V'Achoyvel Behen Chayiv, somebody who traps them, or somebody who injures them, bruises them, on Shabbos, they're Chayiv for the Malachas which they did. U'shosh Katzim U'Ramasim, but the other insects, and crawling animals, which were, are not the eight mentioned in the Torah, Hachoyvel behem potter, one who bruises them, is exempt from punishment. And Hatzadon, if someone who traps them, Latsaya Chayiv, if the reason why he trapped them was because he needed it for whatever the reason is, there's a positive purpose for trapping them, so then he is Chayiv, Shalei Latsayach, but if he does not trap them for a given purpose that he needs them, then he's potter. So the Gemara talks about, the Gemara goes back to talk about these halachas of trapping these animals. And the Gemara says like this, the Gemara Kuf Zayin Amud Beis says, Hatzadon Latzoreh Chayiv, someone who traps these animals for a positive purpose, then they are Chayiv, they're held liable for trapping. So the Gemara asks the question, Man Tana, who is the Tana of the Mishnah that states the aforementioned? So the Gemara says, Amr Yehuda Amar Rav, Rav Shimon, the Tana of the Mishnah is Rav Shimon that says, Malacha Shein Tzricha Legufa Pata Aleha. Rav Shimon that says that any time a person does something, he does a Malacha, but not for its defined and intended purpose, he is Pater. And some learn this with regard to this Halacha. Hamapis Morsa B'Shabbos, somebody who punctures a pus pimple on Shabbos. Im Lasis L'Peh, if his intent was to make an opening, to make a Pesach. So Chayim, so then he is liable. Why? Because then in that case, he had in mind for the intended outcome of making a Pesach, of making an opening. Im L'Hoyti Mimen Alecha, but if his intention was not that he wanted an opening, but rather his intention was to remove the pus from it since he was in pain, potter, then he is exempt and he is not chayiv for this malacha. The Gemara goes on to say, others learn this halacha in reference to a different Gemara. And this Gemara is talking about Hatzad Nachash B'Shabbos, someone who traps a snake on Shabbos, imisasik by the gufa. If the reason why he's doing it, he just doesn't want the snake to bite him, potter. In lerfua chayiv. However, if the point of his trapping this animal was that he wanted it, then he is chayiv. Meaning that if I trapped it because there's a useful benefit for this animal, for this snake, and I want to use it for a medicinal purpose, so therefore there's a reason for it. The reason I'm trapping it is because I want this trapped. So that's called the malacha shetzricha legufa, that the outcome was intended, and therefore I'd be chayiv. Where I did not want the outcome, it's just that I don't want this animal to bite me, but I really don't care to have it trapped, that's a malacha shein etzricha legufa, and I would be potter. It's interesting, this Gemara has quite a few ramifications with regards to practical contemporary halacha. We know that a person sometimes will get a splinter, a person will get glass in his skin, and the question whether or not he'd be allowed to remove it or not. So the Mechaber in Siman Shin Ches in our Chaim Sifir Aleph, he talks there about what's the muktzah status of a needle is. And over there, the Bi'ar Halacha in the Bi'ar Matzal HaKoitz discusses this, and he says the following. Vida, I know. The Hamogan Avram Kosav, the Mogan Avram writes, the Kamon B'Simishin Chavches, Sifkot and Lamed Beis, The Magen Avraham writes in further in Shin Chav Ches, Ubavachi Yizor Shelo Yoytidam. He's talking about there, about taking out a splinter or something embedded in a person's body, and he says that it's permissible to take it out on Shabbos, although one has to be careful, and he has to be cognizant that he is not caused bleeding, because then there's an additional prohibition of being choyvel b'Shabbos. As he explains, the Ovid Chabura, when taking out the splinter or the other foreign object which is embedded in his body, he causes bleeding, then it turns out he is being choyvel, he's making a Chabura k'disereish perek yudas arhejan at tamla shayne. So the Bira Allah of the Mishabura explains like this. He says, V'rotka loyma shelo yaseneh b'inin shiyeh p'sikrei shelo hitaz dam. He should not do it in a way that it's inevitable that it's going to bleed. In other words, he should not, if he knows for certain that by taking out the splinter or taking out the piece of glass is going to, if he knows for certain that it's going to bleed, he should not do it. With this, it is answered. With Al-Yarabba asked, and the Mishabura continues to be Allah says, he says what the Magen Avraham wrote, that one is not allowed to take out a splinter if it's going to cause certain bleeding. The Baal Chemed Moshe disagreed with this, the Svirile, and he maintained the Mutter, that it is allowed, even if you know it's going to bleed. The Bemokim Tsar Le Gozer Rabbonon Af Ba'ifin Zeh. The Chemed Moshe says that one is allowed to take out a splinter or a shard of glass or anything embedded in one's body, even if you know with certainty that it's going to bleed, it's still allowed. And the reason is, as we explained, that it's a mlocha shein etzricha legufa, that I don't want for the blood to come out, and b'mokim tsar, where it's causing me pain, one is allowed to do so. So with regards to a splinter, So this Gemara would seem to say that you're allowed to do so. There's an additional question, though, on a more practical level, which is, we know that when a splinter or some other object is embedded into the body, sometimes one has to use an instrument to get it out. Classically, what's used is a needle, which is used to take it out. Now, we also know that someone who's not in a hospital setting, or somebody who's not an ENT that has a closed sterile packet, is usually going to use a needle which may not be sterile, which may have been exposed to bacteria and other objects, and if you're going to use that to take out a splinter or a shard, he could actually introduce bacteria into the body and cause infection. Therefore, we're told to take the needle and sterilize it in fire, keep it in fire for a few seconds, or whatever the case is, in order to kill all the bacteria. The question would be, is one allowed to do that on Shabbos? And what is the status of doing so on Shabbos? So obviously, this would seem to be a problem, especially since the Chazon Ish and Siman Lamed Zayin Sifkot and Yeralev, he explains that there is a prohibition of cooking metal, even if the metal is not going to be brought to a temperature so that it's like a coal, that it's not, even if it's not very hot, that it would be considered like a coal, still it's prohibited, and it would be the Isra of Bishul, and this is based on the Shita of the Rambam. And Moshe Feinstein in our Chaim Chelek Aleph and Tzadik Gimel, he also maintains that this may be a problem with Bishul, but he qualifies this. He explains that if I'm putting it into a fire, that the fire is big enough or strong enough that it has the potential to turn this piece of metal into a gacheles, into a coal, then it would be prohibited to do it on Shabbos, even though I'm not going to keep it in the fire long enough so that it does not come to that point that it's so hot. But if potentially it can, then it's already prohibited to put it into that fire and be an Issa Bishul. And he explains that every single time a person does Bishul on Shabbos, a person cooks on Shabbos, in essence, all he's doing is he's placing a pot on top of the fire. The fire is going to cook it on its own. The person's not doing the cooking. All he did was place the pot on top of a fire, which it can't come to be cooked. So he explains that the Issa Bishul, the prohibition of cooking on Shabbos, is for a person to put something in a place where it's going to come or potentially can come to being cooked. And therefore, he explains that if the fire is hot enough that it could come to turn it into a gachelas, turn the metal into a gachelas, a kol, then it would be asr. The Ksaisa Shulchan Simkuf Lamedal and about the Shulchan Yudches, as well as Rav Shlomo Zalman brought in Shmei Shabbos L'chasa Perek Aleph Simen Tzamach, he brings from Rav Shlomo Zalman, that so long as it doesn't come, L'dei Gacheles, so long as it doesn't get that hot, that it's like a simmering coal, then there's no Isabishul Min HaToyra. However, whether it's an Isab Min HaToyra or not, it's dependent on this Machloikis, the Chazanish, and Rav Moshe. Therefore, even if it's a chol shem by sakana, and even if there's a great need, it's always better to stay away from sterilizing a needle and fire. The best thing would be is to put out rubbing alcohol onto it and sterilize it that way. Another practical etzah is that when using a needle to take out a foreign object, it's better to use a baby pin, since a baby pin has a chazanish, and others explain it's not muktzah. Because it's not a kli shem lachti lisa. It's not a kli that it's being used for an issa purpose. Because the Chazish explains there's no issa of sewing with a baby needle, with a safety needle. He explains that a baby pin, he says that's not the derech of sewing. So therefore, there's no issa of teufer, and therefore it's not a kli shem lachti lisa. However, a sewing needle is a kli shem lachti l'isur. It may be permitted to use it if you need it, l'tzerach gufay, but it's better to use a baby pin, which there is no question that it's not a kli shem lachti l'isur. Another interesting question which comes to mind is a question with regards to ticks. In certain areas, ticks are very common, and we know that the certain ticks, especially depending on different regions, can carry many different serious diseases, such as Lyme disease. You carry Rocky Mountain spotted fever, and ticks basically feed off different warm-blooded animals to which they attach themselves to, and then when they pass by. Now, it's possible that a tick could have fed on an infected deer, and then when it lodges itself onto a person, it could pass on the serious disease to the human host. Now, well, the problem is that we're looking at a tick. There's no way of knowing whether it's disease or not. There's smaller ones, bigger ones, the dog ticks, the deer ticks, the wood ticks, there's many different types, and sometimes it's hard for a person to know whether it carries diseases, and it's hard, and it really depends on each region. I don't think it's possible to know for certain. And even more, we don't know at what point the tick is going to secrete this disease into the human host that it's in. Therefore, the best thing is to as soon as possible, to have remove the tick. Now, what's interesting is when we remove the tick, you're not supposed to, the preferred method of removing it is not by killing it. On the contrary, we try to take a squeezer and hold it as close to the skin as possible and not crush the head and remove it in its entirety, that we don't kill it, which I believe minimizes the chance of it secreting some of the disease into the human body. So therefore, even if one ends up killing it, one would be allowed to kill it because it's a suffix, b'kuach nefashis, there's potential life-threatening illness could be caused from this tick. And in addition, we don't want to kill it. The intent is not to kill it and usually does not die. So therefore, even if one would not be allowed to kill it, you'd still be allowed to remove it. The question is, what happens when I have the tick removed and now what do I do with it? So if I live in a rural area where I could go into my backyard and put it into a forest where it won't bother anyone, that may be the best solution. Now, some people usually want it. Sometimes people used to save it to test it, but I believe a lot of doctors today don't even bother testing it, and they'll tell you that you shouldn't save it, you don't have to save it. Therefore, so the question is, if I can go release it in the wild, fine, it won't bother anybody, but if that's out of the air for somebody, or a person doesn't have it, lives in more of an urban area, and he doesn't have that availability to him, the question is what he should do. So now, a lot of people will instruct to do is put into a Ziploc bag or a bag where it's secure, or a vessel where it's secure, and keep it there. The question is whether that would be an issa tzad, whether that would be the prohibition of trapping. I've actually seen in some contemporary halacha, people writing that it should not be trapped, but I believe that it's a mistake, and I believe for three different reasons you'd be allowed to put this in a vessel so as that to make sure that it does not attach itself to somebody else. And the reason is, in the Shulchan Aruch Siman Shintav Zayin Tev Zayin, referring to the Gemara which we mentioned before, says Hatzod Nechashim B'Shabbos, someone who traps snakes on Shabbos, or Sharim Asim, or other insects, Hamazikim, which injure people, Imrifua Chayiv. If I'm trapping it because I want this animal, or this insect, I want it for medicinal purposes, there's a positive benefit for me having this, then I'm Chayiv because it's an intended consequence of trapping. But if let's say the only reason why I'm trapping it is because I don't want it to bite me, mutter, then it's allowable to do so because that's not called trapping. Trapping is only the issue of trapping is when I want it. If I don't want it and I just don't want it to bite me, then it's not called trapping. And the Mishnah Berurah writes over there in Sifkat Chav Zayin. He says, "Va'atam," and the reason is, just as we've mentioned from the Gemara, the reason why I'm allowed to trap it is because it's an unintended consequence of trapping. I don't really want it for a positive gain of having this animal trapped. I don't need this trap. I just don't want this animal. I don't want this tick to bite me. If the person would know that this insect would stay where it is, lay as he can, and wouldn't harm him. He wouldn't trap it. The kaimelon, and the halacha is the melacha she'ein itzicha tzarech legufe pata, and the halacha is that any melacha that which is not needed, I don't have in mind the intended consequence, then I am pater. I've lost midrabanan, but it's prohibited midrabanan. However, the halacha mishum hazeka, but where there's potential for this thing to hurt, to harm a person, afilu isidrabanan lekka, there is not even a rabbinical prohibition, and it's completely mutter to trap it. So that's one reason why they allow to put this tick into a bag. Secondly, Rav Shlomo Zalman brings, and it's brought down in Shmishavs Kolchasa, Simon Chav Zayin, and Harukuf Memhei. He brings, Rav Shlomo Zalman brings that any insect, such as an ant, or he brings also a turtle, that it's not hard to trap them, that they're not mechusa tzeda. So there's no iser of tzad. It's not prohibited to trap him because that's not called trapping. Trapping is an animal which is running away, and I have to find some way to trap it. That's called trapping. But an animal which is right there, and all I got to do is pick it up. That's called, it's not mechusa tzeda, and it would not be trapping. Therefore, when it comes halacha lemaisa, the halacha would be that one would be allowed to take this tick which was removed from the body and stick it into a bag. And the reason is, as we've mentioned, for three different reasons. Number one, it's a potential sakana if it attaches itself to somebody else. Number two, it's not trapping since there's no intention for ownership of this, or ownership or trapping of this animal. All I want is it shouldn't harm me. And number three is because it's not mechusat seda, it's sitting right there, it's not hard, it's not something which has to be trapped. Another question with regard to this case of Mokshin Tzichel Agufa would be with regard to starting different intravenous lines and giving shots on Shabbos. We know there's two basic types of shots which are given. And one is the IM shots, intramuscular shots, and then there's the SQ shots, which are the subcutaneous injections. So now, these injections are oftentimes given for someone with a diabetic, or used many times for either infertility or progesterone shots in pregnant women, or for many other different reasons. Now, usually, the people that need these shots are not doing it for fun, they're not doing it because they have a headache, they're doing it because they have an illness, which would allow them to do this on Shabbos. But even where halachically it could be questionable whether one could be mechal Shabbos for this given ailment this person has, taking one of these shots would be allowed. And the reason is that these shots are they should not cause bleeding. Any proud nurse or phlebotomist or doctor or medical professional will pride themselves that nobody bleeds when they get these shots, and anyone who does it often, it's certainly not a given, it's not a secretia that there's going to be blood. And even if it is, it's certainly a davar sheini miskab. The question which comes is with regards to an IV line, starting an IV line. An IV line, which is inserted into catheter which is being inserted into the vein, in essence, also it doesn't require bleeding. The only issue is that in order for the person who is inserting the line, the nurse, doctor, paramedic, to know that he has gotten the catheter into the vein, he's going to pull back on the needle to make sure that he draws back blood and he knows that he's in the vein, and therefore whatever is going to be administered via the IV, he knows is going to go straight into the vein. In that case, the question is whether that is considered amlacha she'ena tzricha legufa or it's amlacha she'tzricha legufa. Meaning, someone gives a shot, even if it bleeds, there's no need for that blood. However, over here, theoretically, the practitioner, it does need the blood because he needs to know that he is in the vein and therefore he's going to pull back on the needle to make sure that his injection was straight into the vein. So the question is whether that's called Malacha She'ena Tzricha Legufa or not. And this is a question which was discussed in the Tzitz Eliezer and Chelek Ches in Siman Tezvav, Perek Yedal, Reish Yud Beis. And Shemiz Lama discusses this in Shemiz Shavs Kolchas of Siman Lamed Beis. And the question really is, based on the Gemara in Subas of Heimeh Beis, it talks about the Dam Besulim, that the Gemara says that the blood which of Sula, if for the first time being with her new husband, whether that's called a davar tzarich l'gufa or not. And the reason is because the blood on the cloth is needed to show that she was of Sula. And the Ran in Shabbos Ayin Heme Beis says that the blood is needed so they could be able to ask the Rav whether it's dam nida or not. That's also called tzricha l'gufa. So the question is as follows. When the person is pulling back on the IV line, is pulling back on the needle to make sure that to draw blood, to know that he's in the IV line, is that similar to a woman that needs the blood to have the blood to show it to a Rav, or the Dam Sulm to know that she's a Psula? Is it similar to those cases, therefore it would be considered Tzricha L'gufa that I need the blood? Or one could say that no, I don't need the blood. All I need to know is that the injection was made into the vein. Now the way I know that is by drawing back the blood, but it's not this blood, I don't need this blood in any way whatsoever. So this is the question. This is a lot of ramifications in practical halacha, which comes up all the time with paramedics or responding to calls, such as a fracture where there's no sakana. We're not talking about a case where it may be an angulated fracture or a compound fracture or anything like that, where it's a simple fracture and it's known and established that it's not a sakana. However, at the same time, the patient is in excruciating pain. Now what the paramedic comes and he wants to start the patient on morphine, he wants to start an IV line. Now we know that if there's no other extenuating circumstances, this patient is not a cardiac patient, there's no other medical issues, pain in it of itself is not considered a chalishish per sakana, and I would not be able to do a malacha d'oraisa to treat a patient who's simply in pain. So the question is whether drawing back on the needle to when I'm starting the IV line, if that's called the melacha d'oraisa, so someone's in excruciating pain, one would not be allowed to start a line to give him morphine. However, if one maintains that it's a melacha she'ena tzricha legufa and that it's not a melacha d'oraisa, then one would be allowed to start a line to give morphine for someone who's in excruciating pain, because Allah has a chayla shem b'sakana, and a chayla shem b'sakana who's in a lot of pain, which is nafal mishkav, that his whole body's in pain to the point where he's immobilized by it, he would be allowed to do melacha d'rabbanon. So if starting a line is a melacha shem tzichul guf and a melacha d'rabbanon, one would be allowed to start that line. In practicality, I believe that most poskim assume that starting IV line is at best a suffix d'oraisa, and they don't allow for it, but they would be allowed to call a non-Jewish taxi or EMS and transport the patient to the hospital where he could receive pain medication there.
The Daf Yomi Halacha series has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center. To sign up for the Halacha Center's weekly interactive e-journal, please email subscribe to info@thehalachacenter.org.